Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. All together, please. Om Ajnana Tamarandasya Ganandana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobistam Stavitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yukta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamsha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Bitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Savadutam Prijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padang Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamsha He Krishna Karana Sindhu Dhina Bandhu Jagatpite Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapcha Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavanishwari Rishavana Sudadevi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpa Dharubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Padita Nam Pavnebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram 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 Hare Hare Jai. So, reading from Srimad Gita Upanishad, chapter 5, verse number 20. Please repeat. Na prayasyet priyam prapya no vijet prapya cha priyam stira buddhir asamudho brahmavid brahmani stitaha na prayasyet priyam prapya no vidyat prapya cha priyam stir buddhir asamudho brahmavid brahmani stita na prairishyat priyam prapya no vidyat prapya cha priyam Stira buddhir asamudho mudho brahmavid brahmani stitaha na prarishyet priyam prapya no vidyet prapya cha priyam stira buddhir asamudho mudho brahmavid brahmani stitaha Okay. Na prasiyat priyam prapya. No vidyat prapcha cha priyam. Stitar buddhir asamudho. Brahmavid brahmani stita. Na prasiyat priyam prapya. No vidyat prapya cha priyam stira buddhir asamudho brahmavid brahmani stita Okay, word for word, please repeat. Na prahrishyat never prahrishyat rejoices Priyam the pleasant Prapya achieves achieving No vidyat. Na. Oh, sorry. Na. Does not. Udvijet. Become agitated. Prapya. Obtaining. Cha. Also. Apriyam. The unpleasant. Sthira buddhihi. Self-intelligence. Asamudha. Unbewildered. Brahmavit. One who knows the Supreme perfectly. Brahmani. In the transcendence. Stitaha. Situated. Translation, Srila Prabhupada. A person who neither rejoices upon achieving something pleasant, nor laments upon obtaining something unpleasant, who is self-intelligent, who is unbewildered, and who knows the science of God, is already situated in transcendence. Please repeat. A person who neither rejoices upon achieving something pleasant, nor laments upon obtaining something unpleasant, who is self-intelligent, who is unbewildered, and who knows the science of God, is already situated in transcendence. Purport, Srila Prabhupada. The symptoms of a self-realized person are given herein. That's okay now. The first symptom is that he is not illusioned by the false identification of the body with his true sense, self. He knows perfectly well that he is not this body, but is the fragmental portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is therefore not joyful in achieving something, nor does he lament in losing anything which is related to his body. This steadiness of mind is called sthira buddhi, or self-intelligence. He is therefore never bewildered by mistaking the gross body for the soul, nor does he accept the body as permanent and disregard the existence of the soul. This knowledge elevates him to the station of knowing the complete science of the Absolute Truth, namely Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. He thus knows his constitutional position perfectly well, without falsely trying to become one with the Supreme in all respects. This is called Brahman realization or self-realization. Such steady consciousness is called Krishna consciousness. Can you close these windows, please? All of them. Makum karochi vachalam bhangam laite girim yat kripa tamaham vande shri guru dinatarinam na pririshyet priyam prapya no vidyet prapya cha priyam sthira buddhiye asamudho brahmavit brahmani stitaha. Translation. A person who neither rejoices upon achieving something pleasant, nor laments upon obtaining something unpleasant, who is self-intelligent, who is unbewildered, and who knows the science of God, is already situated in transcendence. Yes. So here Krishna is starting to describe, well, he has started actually earlier on, the characteristics of a self-realized person. As Prabhupada, you see Prabhupada, he always goes to the point. The symptom of the self-realized person are given herein. Prabhupada always goes right to the point. That's the brilliance of Prabhupada. He goes clearly to the point. This is a sign of a self-realized soul, empowered. The symptoms of a self-realized person are given herein. So, This is very important because it knows for us that are on the path of sadhana, it teaches us what we should cultivate and what we should expect as we progress. When we overcome anarthas, we will be able to become more situated in transcendence. Material consciousness is because of our ignorance of the transcendental world. But as we become purified, we can realize Krishna and His abode, fix our consciousness at His lotus feet there, and then become situated in that consciousness. And this consciousness in the material world is a consciousness of duality, happiness and distress. This is the first point, is it not? He neither rejoices or upon getting something pleasant, or laments upon obtaining something unpleasant. So this is the material world. In the material world, people are after sense gratification, and when they get it, they think this is a happy day. And when they don't get it, or they lose it, they think this is an unhappy day. They lament. Soshiti nakongshiti. Right? Brahma-bhuta prasanatma. Na soshati na kankshati. Krishna later on explains that those that are spiritually situated and on the Brahma-bhuta platform, they don't hanker for material things, nor do they lament when they don't get them, because they have a higher taste. They have the higher taste. They are fixed on the transcendental platform, and there's no comparison between the transcendental platform and the misery of the material world. So, this is the first point, the duality of the material world. And then, as Prabhupada very nicely develops in the purport, and he's self-intelligent. This is a very interesting phrase, is it not? Self-intelligent. So, self-intelligent, as Prabhupada explains there, is that he knows perfectly well that he is not the body, but he is a fragmental portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if you have that conception, that I'm not the body, so you need another conception of yourself, right? You can't just give up some identity completely. That would be voidism, impersonalism. Oh, I don't have any identity. But rather, you need a replacement identity. So self-intelligent means that you know that you are part of the Supreme Self of Avyavamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. That you are an angsa of Krishna, Vibhinangsa. That you are an expansion of Krishna. So this is your identity. Lord Chaitanya puts it in a more devotional manner. In this way he says, Gopi Bhata Kamalayo Dasa Das Anudas. I'm the servant of the servant of the master of the gopis. In a technical way we can say I'm a part and parcel. Yes. But what's the function of that part and parcel? That is to be devoted to the supreme whole. Ishavasha Idam Sarvam. Yatkinchat Jagadam Jagat. That everything has emanated from Om Purnam, the Supreme. But our mistake is, how do we fall into this duality is, that we don't recognize that it has emanated from the Supreme. And we claim that it belongs to me. If it's emanated from the Supreme, then it belongs to the Supreme. Right? Just like if I make a painting, I can say it belongs to me, in a material sense. If you come in and say, no, it belongs to me. So a devotee is, this is called niskinchina. He doesn't claim proprietorship because he's self-intelligent. So he understands everything belongs to Krishna. But when we claim this is my body, aham mamaiti, I am this body, and then mamaiti, the things to do with this body, they belong to me, then what's the next step? We try to control those things. right? This is my house, my land, my wife, my country, my money. We claim them to be ourselves, and then we try to control those things, and then we try to enjoy. So first we claim proprietorship of something that belongs to Krishna, then we try to control it, where it actually is Ishvasya Idam Sarvam, is actually controlled by Krishna, and then we try to enjoy it. So proprietorship, control, enjoyment. This is our material psychology. Right? Everyone is thinking, Aham Mameti, I am this body, I have a material identity. Mameti, these things belong to me. Then I want to control it. And then I want to enjoy it. And then, Soshiti Kangshiti. You see, when I can control it and enjoy it nicely, oh, I rejoice. And when I can't control it, or I lose it, or it doesn't work out nicely, then I lament. That's material consciousness. Yin and yang, or black and white, happiness, distress. So the material world is rooted in this false identity. I am this body. For self-intelligent, as Prabhupada explains, the soul understands I'm part and parcel of Krishna. So I belong not to myself, but I belong to Krishna. And therefore, the body, it belongs to Krishna. It doesn't belong to me. The paraphernalia of the body doesn't belong to me. The house, the land, the country, doesn't belong to me. Hasn't emanated from me. Right? We come naked, as they say, and we go naked. We don't take anything with us, except our papa and punya. And maybe our bhakti, sukriti. So, we are claiming all these things, and this is rooting us in this happiness and distress, you see. Because we're not the controller, so therefore unpleasant things come, and pleasant things come, what we reckon to be pleasant. What do we reckon to be pleasant? Something that suits my mind and body, or the extensions of my mind and body. My family, my country, you know, my country wins the World Cup or something, or a gold medal, now there's Olympics. So we think, oh, that's wonderful. Why? Because we identify. I'm Russian and they won the weightlifting championship, so I'm happy. So we're identifying, and all it starts with the idea of the self, then it goes to the body, and then it goes on to the extensions. But this is all illusion. So that self-intelligent means that. But also, self-intelligent, you can also understand it in another way. That you are intelligent yourself. Huh? In the sense that on the basis of your knowledge, your realization of your true nature, you are able to guide yourself in life. You are able to make intelligent choices. Right? You're able to choose the spiritual side and not the material side. So to do that, that means you must know Shastra, you must know the advice of Guru, the Mahajans, Guru Parampara, and your own bona fide Guru. You must have, then you can be self-intelligent. Just like Krishna, I mean Arjuna at the beginning, he wasn't self-intelligent, right? He was thinking, I'm this body, I'm related to these family members. This is why Krishna is. You can always relate what Krishna says to what Arjuna's condition at the beginning of the Gita. Because Arjuna's confusion at the beginning represents the material confusion of all the souls. So at the beginning, Arjuna's confused. Now he's explaining, Krishna is saying, you have to be sthira buddhi, right? Self-intelligence. That means your intelligence must have to be fixed in the understanding that you're spirit soul. And then you can make choices, intelligent choices, discrimination, on the basis of that. And then you can understand, oh, I'm not the body, so though I may control and enjoy things, ultimately, if I do it in an undisciplined way, then I'll just hanker and lament. And in the middle of that, there's Kunta. We hanker for something, and then when we have it, like for it, we hanker for money. People are trained up from birth, school system, get a job, get money. So they hanker for money, they work in a factory, hellish condition. They flatter a boss to get promotion, right? And then when they get some money or position, dunam, then they are in Kunta, right? The government wants to tax them. There's thieves breaking in the house. They want to steal the opulence of anxiety. And then when it's gone, especially at the time of death, they lament. Right? Like sometimes somebody may steal your shoes outside the temple. So you lament. Oh my God, how am I going to get home now? Oh, I have to walk on. And then you, ooh, I'll curse that person. And you start searching all over the temple. Where are my shoes gone? May his family go to hell for 100 lifetimes for stealing my 50 rupee shoes. So we lament and we become angry and frustrated, right? And then, so then we go and steal somebody else's shoes, which is probably the reason why ours was stolen in the first place. Anyway, so that's the material world, right? People are going into conflict about different versions of sense enjoyment. Hare Krishna. So they're all angry and frustrated by their sense enjoyment. It's like bait, you know, the bait is there. You will enjoy, and the fish nibbles at it, and then the fisherman pulls the hook, right? The fisherman feels the line, right? I've never been fishing, but I understand the science. The fisherman understands the science, but he feels the fish on the hook, then he pulls it, and the poor fish gets caught. I never wanted to go fishing, I always thought it was a bit cruel. Can't be nice to have a hook in your mouth. But that's the material world. People are being hooked by sense enjoyment. And all the leaders of society, they know that, right? They put a beautiful woman there, or a promise of money, dunam janam, or you'll have status, you know. If you have this car, your neighbors will think you're a great man. They'll be envious at the same time though, they don't say that. And they always show the car advertisement, and there's no other cars on the road, have you noticed? There's no traffic jam like in Vrindavan sitting at Vidyapit for an hour trying to go 10 meters. No, it's always an empty road, and the man is joyful there, and his wife is smiling at him. What a man I've got. Huh? But this is all illusion, this is all the hook of Maya. So these advertising people, they know how to hook people. But they're the agents of Kali, they're the agents of illusion, you see. But then, through being self-intelligent, we understand, oh, I'm not this body, these things don't belong to me. And I should use them, therefore, in the service of the Creator, right? And then we get union with Krishna, who is an ocean of rasa. And we enter the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. But the difficulty is, we are attracted to sense enjoyment through many, many lifetimes we're trying to enjoy, right? Now if you're in the animal species, you can enjoy, you're living out your karma. And also, it's not that in Krishna consciousness or Krishna, he is saying don't try to enjoy the material world, but he says, satisfy your material necessities in a regulated way. If you need sex, then get a good wife and be faithful to her. If you want family life, then have children, right? But have a duty to them. And the end of the fifth canto, it explains that your duty to those children is to bring them up in Krishna consciousness. And then that's a wonderful service. So in Krishna consciousness, we don't, or Krishna, or the Vedas, whatever, don't artificially say, stop sense enjoyment, like the six Goswamis, just living on some charge, every day or something like that. We say no. Eat, sleep, mate, and defend, but in regulated way according to the Vedas. And then when you're not neurotic through artificially following levels of renunciation to which you're not qualified, then you can spend your time in a peaceful way realizing the absolute truth. And then gradually you'll become to this state where you don't hanker and lament. And you're sthira buddhi, you're self-intelligent, you're realizing the Supreme. And you're all devotees, right? So you understand, yes, I'm realizing the Supreme. Like I remember a few weeks ago, one lady, she said, how can you convince somebody that Krishna consciousness is correct? Well, yes, you can say the Shastra is very logical and sensible. The Acharyas are very impressive. They're very logical and they're very saintly. And manifest before us, there are many devotees, and we can see that they are peaceful, learned people, trying to avoid intoxication and illicit, you know, they're trying to live a pure life. You can see that. But actually, in the 11th canto, Bhagavatam, it explains very simple that the proof of the pudding is in the eating. You know, if you want to know if this pudding is good, you have to taste it. It doesn't matter how much it's been on television advertised. Only when you taste the pudding is it proof that it's good. So that's what it says in the 11th canto there. It says that if you practice spiritual life, then your material hunger goes away. You find that you are less lusty for dhanam, janam, sundaram, money, material status, material sex life, you find that decreasing. And so your hunger for material things go away. You're feeling a sense of satisfaction. Just when you eat a good pudding, apple pie, then you feel, oh, I'm satisfied. And then you also get a sense of happiness. Oh, I feel good. So these are the way Krishna consciousness acts. We actually realize, the devotee personally and directly starts to realize the absolute truth. And in the Chaitanya Shikshamrita, Bhakti Vinod Thakur puts it very nicely. He says that if somebody practices chanting, even if he doesn't follow regulative principles in a regular way, but if he just tries chanting, then he'll get some taste that he's not tasted before. You know, it's different from the material taste, because he's beginning to touch the spiritual platform. He's beginning to realize that there is something different about this. And just like many devotees here, you've all been chanting many, many years, right? How you can chant many, many years and want to chant more and more if you're not getting something? So the ultimate proof is your own experimentation. So that famous cartoon in the New York Times or something, we tell people to chant, 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 but then the person is saying, no, the wife is saying chant, 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 but the husband is saying can't, can't, can't. So unless you actually go to the restaurant and take the pudding, it's all theoretical, right? It's all pie in the sky, not pie in the belly. Pie in the pit. Pit puja. So this is our thing. We entreat people, you try it. Oh, you're a big atheist. You believe that everything came from nothing. If you believe in such crazy things, why don't you try chanting? Your neighbors won't think you're any more crazy than you are already for thinking that everything can come from nothing. So why not be a little less crazy and try an experiment? You're a big scientist, right? You believe everything came from nothing. So why don't you experiment with the Maha Mantra? And then you'll become, as Krishna says here to Arjuna, sthira buddhi, self-intelligent. Oh, there's something here. I'm getting realization, I'm getting satisfaction. And I have personal experience of that. I used to be in London Temple. We had a very nice guest program. We'd give them a talk. You know, we'd hand out meal tickets. You know, because it's downtown London, many tourists. Free meal at the Hare Krishna. So we'd give them a talk, and then a nice meal upstairs, rice dal, chapati, sabji, everything. And then it was in a big room like this. And then people would just sit around and talk. So I was supervising the whole thing. So I found that the best way was just people, just to be friendly to people, not, you know, try to give them philosophy that they weren't really equipped or ready to understand. But I also had a little shop where I had lots of neem beads and bead bags. So I would pass them out and I'd teach them how to chant. You know, the bead, just try this as a meditation. And so those that took the beads for, you know, 50p in those days, maybe 2 quid now, and started to chant, they would come back to the temple and then ask questions. All right, you understand? You just had to be friendly and maybe get them to chant, and then they would find that, because the soul wakes up, sthira buddhi. And then, next word Krishna puts here, asamudho. So this also goes back to chapter 4. What's that verse? Yomam evam asamudho janati purushottamam. Those who have no doubt, asamudho, not bewildered, Prabhupada translates, or without doubts, without confusions, that I am Purushottam, that I am the Supreme Person. Sava, sasava vid bhajatiman, they, knowing such, they begin naturally to worship me, they do haribhajan. That means instead of trying to please themselves, aham mameti, as we explained, they try to do something for Krishna. So they would also come back to the temple and they would like wash the pots, you know, for the lunch program. And they would sit around and then maybe clean the windows or something like this spontaneously, you know, because we all want to be useful. And sava bhavena bharata, that's the last line of that verse. That person is the knower of everything. Why is that? Because the soul is naturally the knower of everything. In the material world, we're all the natural unknowers. We always have some confusion or some illusion about what he meant or what she said or what's the best politician, what's the best diet, what should I do? We have misperception. So we're in the ocean of confusion. But the person who's touching the spiritual platform, he's self-intelligent. He starts to realize the absolute truth. His mind becomes clear and he starts to perceive things as they are. Because maya means that which is not. That's the translation actually. Prabhupada gives that, maya, that which is not. So they're perceiving things which is not. You know, they're thinking this person is good, but he might be a car thief. So on and so forth. So asamudho, it's related to that. As you become self-intelligent and you realize Krishna and the spiritual platform, you become unbewildered. And then you know the science of God. So the science of God means haribhajan. The science of God means that. It means to use everything instead of, like we said, aham mameti, I'm this body and things related to this body of mine and therefore I should control these things and then I should enjoy these things. Instead of this consciousness, we start to haribhajan, means we use everything, our wife, our family, our house, whatever, in the service of Krishna. Just like a good child. I think we gave the example before. If you give a child a box of toffees, then he, you know, different flavors, the nice child will say, oh, daddy, this one's nice, and he'll give it back to daddy, right? You try this one, daddy, this is my favorite. It's his favorite, but he gives it back to his father, out of love. So this is natural, Hari Bhajan. I've been given existence, I've been given mind, intelligence, certain material facilities, so that's like the chocolate box. So you can offer the chocolates back to the person who gave them. That's Hari Bhajan. Acting instead of for yourself, you act for Hari. And Hari means one who removes all the obstacles in your bhajan, in your spiritual progress. So this, as Prabhupada says in the fifth purport, this is the symptom of the self-realized soul. And it's very interesting, because this is fifth chapter, nice Kamya Bhakti Yoga. So if we look up previous chapters up to this, we can see a progression. Like we said, in the first chapter, Arjuna is confused. He doesn't know what the right thing is to do. So therefore he thinks just dismiss it all and run away. He's on the battlefield. He doesn't know whether I should fight or not. He doesn't want to fight. There are his relatives. He's confused. Material identity. Right? So then Krishna, second chapter, Arjuna says, now, look Krishna, I'm confused. Karpanya doso pahatatsvabhava. I'm confused about my duty. You tell me, I surrender. You look peaceful and calm and intelligent, and I know you're my well-wisher. So you give me advice, Krishna. So the first point is, look, Arjuna, you're lamenting, right? Lamentation. When you try to enjoy in an unregulated way, you ended up lamenting. But you're lamenting for what is not worthy of grief, because you're not the body and nor are they the body. So the first point of spiritual life. First point, first situation is, you're starting to realize, like Arjuna, some material confusion. Just like Sanatana Goswami and Lord Chaitanya. Sanatana approached Lord Chaitanya and he said, look, people say, he was a big government minister, one of the top ministers along with Rupa Goswami, Dabir Khan and Sakir Malik, right? And he approached Lord Chaitanya, people think I'm a very learned scholar in Persian, Sanskrit, and this and that. But I don't know anything, because I don't know what I am. People think I'm learned, but I don't know my real nature. This is what he said. And then he said, and I also don't know why I'm suffering, because of adidevic, adibhotic misery, adiatmic, mind and self, the body, and so many miseries, I can't stop them. So why am I suffering and what am I? So this is the material situation, that we don't have a proper understanding of ourselves. We don't understand why am I suffering. We're always planning to be happy, and we're, if you get a job, they tell you at school you'll be happy, then you get a job and the boss is not a pleasant person and the work is not, I won't say anything else, the usual expletives that people have for their boss. And then you get married to the wife and you come back from work and you say, you're exploiting me now. You cook the dinner, or something like that happens. We're equal, don't you know? I read it in the magazine. Yeah, sure we're equal. A cow and a bull is equal. No, they're different. They have different roles. Anyway, so the... We're always planning for happiness, but it's never arriving. But it's always what do they say? The grass is greener on the other side of the hill. I'll make it through to the other side of the hill. But this material world is designed like that, huh? So that we don't try to stay here eternally, but we realize this is not our real place. So we become interested, like Sanatana, like Arjuna, what is the real truth? So it starts with the idea, I'm not the body. So if not the body, then I can use the body, like if I'm in the motor car and I feel, oh, I'm feeling really hungry. So then we go to the petrol station and we say to the the wallet. We say, fill her up. I'm feeling really hungry. And he fills it up and we drive down the road. Maybe I need an oil change. We go to the next petrol station, I'll change the oil, I'm really hungry. And he looks at you, carry by, pagal admi, something. Oh, I'm feeling really uncomfortable, better change the pressure in the tires. It's not going to work. You're not the motor car. You're the driver, you're the soul. You have to tend to the soul. And then we go to 7-Eleven and we get poisoned by all the chemicals in the food. But anyway, the point is that we have to act for the soul. That's self-intelligent. And that means Hari Bhajan, because we are part and parcel of the Supreme. So Krishna tells that, right? You're not the body. Then he gives a general synopsis in the second chapter. And then the third chapter is called Karma Yoga. So Karma Yoga means to do your material duties for the Supreme. But remember when Sanatana Goswami, Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya were having a conversation, and Lord Chaitanya asked Ramananda Roy at the beginning, what is sadhya, the goal, and what is the sadhana, how to achieve the goal, sadhya and sadhana. And okay, so then one point Ramananda, he said, well, follow Varnashram, do your material duties. And Lord Chaitanya said, well, that's okay, but it's external. He wasn't pleased. So that's the third chapter. Yes, you should do your material duties for Vishnu, yagyata karmano nyatra lokoyam karma bandana, or else they'll bind you to the material world. So, but still, okay, I'm doing my material duties in relation to the body. And I'm getting liberated. Okay, but let's go a bit further. So in the fourth chapter is transcendental knowledge. So in the fourth chapter, which we completed a few months back, of course, Krishna gives all sorts of spiritual understanding. He gives that verse, Janati Purushottam, and the Supreme. You have to understand the spiritual world. And then the result is then chapter 5, which is Naiskarmya Yoga. You see, when you have spiritual knowledge, and then you naturally become more internalized. Right? The material world means bahimukh. You're looking outward. This is figuratively speaking, to the body and things external to the body as your source of happiness. But when you have spiritual knowledge, you become more self-situated. Atmarama, you start to contemplate. That's a very interesting, I'm not the body, Krishna, I'm part and parcel of Krishna. So you develop an internal samadhi. You start to meditate on spiritual matters on the basis of knowledge. And the result of that potency of spiritual knowledge is that you become Naiskarmya. You perform your material duties, but without attachment, in a natural way. You understand? Karma Yoga means, oh, I'm worshiping the Supreme Lord, oh, I'm going to elevate myself, me. But Naiskarmya Yoga, you're starting to realize that the real internal life, the real fruit of yoga is internal. This is antirmukh. You're starting to look to the soul instead of the body. Not the external, but you're starting to realize yourself as a soul, as the driver of the body, and separate from the body. So then the sixth chapter, which we'll come to, is right, Jnana Yoga, right? Astanga Yoga. So once you're realizing your soul, yourself internally, and this today's verse is that situation, you're not looking out, you're not hankering, lamenting, you're self-intelligent, you're without doubt, and you're understanding things clearly, your relationship with God, then the next chapter is there, number six chapter, Jnana Yoga, and that's about meditation, right? So I remember one Bhakti Godhead, somebody asked Well, I meditate, he said to Prabhupada. Said, well, Prabhupada said, well, what do you meditate upon? And the person said, I'm paraphrasing, oh, I meditate on anything. He said, well, you mean you meditate on the television set? Is that yoga? Or the doorknob? Or the neighbor's dog barking? I'm meditating on that. No, Prabhupada said, no, meditation means to meditate on transcendence. But unless you are realizing transcendence, how can you meditate upon it, right? If you don't know what music is, how do you know what to listen? You don't know to listen. If you're deaf, rather, you can't meditate on music. So through transcendental knowledge, you become more internalized as you are understanding and realizing the validity of it. You're becoming asamudho, becoming without doubt. So then you start. Then you can enter into Ashtanga Yoga. So you're going from karma to jnana to yoga, meditation. You see the progression of the chapters. And then what's number seven? Seventh chapter. You can see, you can examine the whole Bhagavad Gita in this way actually. Seventh chapter is knowledge of the Absolute, you see. So through your jnana, your internalization, your meditation on Krishna, then you gain knowledge of the Absolute. More and more directly. You're starting to taste the pudding, you can say. More directly, you're starting to realize Krishna. And then what's the next chapter? Attaining the Supreme. Right? So once you're meditating on the Supreme, that's your entry into the Supreme. That means attaining the Supreme means to leave this material situation, go to transcendence as your residence. Right? So you can see how the progression is there. Attaining. And then, and that's the start of the Bhakti Yoga section. The first six chapters are said to be like karma yoga. They develop a lot of karma ideas. And then the ninth chapter. Oh, then after you attain the Supreme, the most confidential knowledge. So that's the Achincha Bheda Bheda Tattva chapter, where Krishna explains that all beings are in me, are but part of me, and are mine. Just like he said the same thing in the fourth chapter, after giving a load of yajñas to perform, he says the best one is japa, he says, japanam yajñanam. He says the one that you should perform is japa, but he says just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master, Tadvini Pratipatena. And then the next verse, and then when you've learned the truth, in the next verse he said, then you'll know that all beings are mine, are part of me and are in me. So this is when you improve your meditation and realization of the Supreme, then you will realize that everything is situated within Krishna. And Krishna is yet separate in his own abode. Just like Mother Yashoda. She looked in the mouth of Krishna and saw herself. Everything was within her, Krishna. But yet, she was out. So Achincha Bheda Bheda. Everything is within Krishna, and yet Krishna has a separate... And then she says, yes, in that chapter, he says, all beings are in me, and yet I am not in them, in that sense. But I am fully in them, but I am separate in my own abode, and so on. So this is Achincha Bheda Bheda. So that means you're starting to realize the transcendental platform. The material platform is limited by time and space. We're fixed in a certain time, and we're driven along by the Kala Shakti. We're fixed in this place, and if we want to go to Delhi, we have to go there. But if we, just like Narada Muni, he just thinks of a place and immediately his form goes to that place. This is in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, just by the power of his conscience. So it's unrestricted existence. In the material platform, we're restricted. So this is very inspiring, just think. If you could travel all over the universe without having to book on Indian Rail and pay the tax. and sit with 100 people in one carriage for 2.5 days. You could just go there by the power of your mind. Go to the beach on Puri for a day in the afternoon. And then go to Kanyakumari and sleep there because it's warm at night. So just think, this is the actual potency of a spiritual platform. Everything is facilitated to the spirit soul. And we're meant for that as part and parcel of Krishna. So that's the Achincha Bay Tattva. And then, what happens next? The opulence of the Absolute. So Krishna really, you know, he explains, I'm the ability in man. Wherever you see genius, smart, ability, that's me. I'm the opulence is. But then he says, yad yad vibhutimat satram srimad uditan ebhava. Everything is mirsambhavam. Everything is just a spark of my splendor. The beauty of Krishna is, right, is inconceivable. If we could just get some slight glint of the beauty of Krishna, we'd never look to anything else, you know. Just like when we were 20, we fell in love with a beautiful girl and we don't forget her, right? Oh, but she married my best friend or something. Well, she did, told me I had crooked teeth. Didn't want anything to do with me. Or something like that in the material world happens. But the beauty of Krishna and the residence and the intimate devotees of Krishna is unlimited, the opulence. And if we could just get some glimpse in our meditation, our mind would be sthira buddhi, we'd be fixed on that. You see, opulence of the Absolute. And then universal form, Krishna, in response to Arjuna, he says, yes, I'll directly reveal my opulence as the Vishwarupa. But Arjuna sees, well, that's a material expression of Krishna's opulence. Not material, but in a sense, his opulence in the material world. That everyone's reciprocating with the universal form through their karma and material desires. Just like if you were to see all the prison houses, if you were to see Tihar jail, it wouldn't be a pleasant sight. All the criminals in there and they're all eating khichdi or something like that and fighting each other for a spot near the window. It's not pleasant. But the material world is not a pleasant place. So in the material world we're reciprocating with Paramatma, Vishwarup, in that way. But in the spiritual world, it's a Rasleela. That the Rasleela has got many understandings. Yes, Radha and Krishna are in the middle, but then Krishna is expanded with every gopi and dancing. So this also indicates that in the spiritual world, Krishna is dancing with everyone. It's a much better reciprocation than to dance with the laws of karma and Paramatma. You see, that's the Rasleela of the material world. It's not very rasikic, it's rather miserable. Dukalaya Masashvita. But in the Rasleela of the spiritual, everyone is in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, enjoying endless rasa with Krishna and reciprocating in different sthayi bhavs, cowherd boy, gopi, friendship, mother, this, that. They're all ecstatically engaged in the dance of ecstasy. So, universal form, it shows the material, but Arjuna says, I don't want that. So then the next chapter comes along and Krishna explains, okay, you don't want that, now be devoted me in transcendence. And here's how you do it, through devotional service. So then he says, what's the best? The best way is to just fix your mind upon me. Manmana bhava mad bhakto. Throughout the Gita, Krishna is saying that. Just fix your mind without deviation. Now, if you can't do that, follow the rules and regulations of Bhakti Yoga. Right? Follow a regulated household life, regulated brahmachari life, it doesn't matter. But chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hari Hari, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. It's invested all the potency. It's Nityananda Shakti is there. That's why the holy name is said to be more merciful than Krishna.
Because it has Nityananda Shakti. Nityananda saved Jagai Madai, but Lord Chaitanya was defending his devotee. Of course, they're non-different. So we shouldn't denigrate Lord Chaitanya as being not as merciful as Lord. But that's an expression of his mercy, Guru Shakti, Baladev Shakti. So then, if you can't do that, then just work for me and meditate, just gain knowledge. And he gives step by step in that chapter. And then so you can see right from the end, Krishna is giving all these things to Arjuna, he's leading him to that. So then somebody, well, what about the 13th chapter? Well, this is meant, you see, at the beginning of this chapter, Arjuna asked Krishna, 5th chapter, well, you're talking about works in devotion, but you're also talking analytical analysis of the material world, which is better. So at the beginning of this 5th chapter, Krishna tells Arjuna, he says, well, actually, Arjuna, they're not separate. Don't think of them as separate. But rather, knowledge and understanding of the spiritual platform is the servant of bhakti. You understand? It's not a different thing, but bhakti gyan is the servant of developing devotion, because it guides us what we should be doing. It guides us in the standards of sadhana and what is appropriate. Uddhava Gita, Krishna to Uddhava in 11th canto is very clear. He says, what is piety? Piety means to act in accordance with your own particular development. Impiety means to act less than your own situation or above it. That means if you try to act like a Paramahansa, that is impious, if you're a Madhyamadhikari. But if you have a good understanding and then you go back to material life, and you don't struggle to follow the principles and chant your rounds, then that is impious. So you should stand and fight, you know, because we'll have troubles. We're trying to overcome. But we should take shelter. So how do we take shelter? So that is in those 12, just like we say, at the beginning of this, Arjuna thinks knowledge and devotion are different paths. No. So once in the 12th chapter, Krishna gives the different levels of bhakti, and somebody can pick up whichever he finds suitable. Then he gives support to that endeavor through all the knowledge in the next 6 chapters. You see the point? Because this knowledge, just like we said in the 4th chapter, that knowledge, transcendental knowledge, brings you to a more internal understanding, a more internal situation of consciousness. You become, I don't hanker and lament for the external things. My intelligence is fixed at Krishna's lotus feet. I become asamudho without doubt by realization, and I learn how Haribhajan from my own heart as the natural process. So the knowledge given in the last 6 chapters, they fix you in your devotional practice. So you can go, we can quickly look at them now. Look, see nature in joy and consciousness. So then you enjoy, you understand the material world, you understand the soul and consciousness. Then the next chapter, how the consciousness is affected in the material by the 3 modes of material nature. So then when you wake up in the morning and you think, oh my God, I'm heavy headed, maybe go back to sleep. No, this is tamogun, right? So then you think, no, how do I fight tamogun? Don't take a shower. All the water in Vrindavan is Jamuna Pani. And then, you go to Mangalarti and you become spiritual, right? You see the beautiful forms of the deities. Somebody's not singing in tune at the Mangalarti, but you think it's wonderful anyway. He's singing too high so you can't join in. But anyway, you're getting transcendental, so you know how to fight, if you know the 3 modes of material nature. In this 5th chapter, he says, one who can tolerate the urges of the mind and body, and overcome passion and anger. Passion means rajagun, anger is the passion deteriorating into anger. then he is happy in this world. You'll find it in the fifth chapter. So if we so it's expanded that knowledge of the three modes of material nature. And then, okay, that's very nice, nature, enjoy, consciousness, material, then the yoga of the Supreme Person. And then Krishna explains, I'm the root of the whole creation, like a banyan tree inverted, the root is up. But so everything is rooted in Krishna. And he uses that. And then 16, okay, who is the Supreme Person? Then the divine and demoniac nature. It starts with the divine, you know, they're peaceful, self-controlled, generous, considerate. They don't drive like a madman. So they're balanced in their practice of eating, sleeping, mating, defending, you know, so on and so forth. And then the demoniac. What does he, first thing he says about the demoniac, so much wealth do I have today, right? So they, you know, they want Sita, but they don't want Ram. They want Lakshmi, but they don't want Narayan. Same thing. They want to claim proprietorship over the energy of Krishna. So much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my plans. You know, like, greed has no end. You may have $1 trillion, but you want to get more. Right? You're walking down the road, and you find 1 rupee on the floor, and you pick it up, even though you're a trillionaire. Right? You think, I've got that. Better with me than that beggar. So if people become super rich, they sometimes become super hard-hearted and say, I've got it because I'm a better man than him. Right? But we should, a devotee, understand the dog, the cow, they're all part and parcel of Krishna. That's devotee. He understands that they may be in a dog body or mosquito body, but they're a spirit soul like me. I'm no better than them. They're no better. So, this is, I will get more. Here's my enemy and I have killed him. Here's my enemy and I will kill him. Right, that's what's going on in the world, right, isn't it? All these super rich people. If anyone wants to get off the reserve currency and the banking system, they kill them and call them terrorists and God knows what, and right? That's what's going on, the world politics behind the scene. And then the divisions of faith, right? And then Krishna sums it all up. The perfection of renunciation, and at the end he says, don't act from false ego, always remember me and just surrender to me, I'm your wishing friend. So that's the whole Bhagavad Gita. But it starts, and this fifth chapter is very important because it shows the effect of the fourth chapter, Transcendental Knowledge. And so therefore, the beginning of sadhana bhakti, it's very essential to gain sambandha jnana, to understand the relationship between Krishna, the soul, the material energy, the spiritual, all these interrelationships. It's called the dasha-mula. You can get Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Jiva Dharma. He explains all these things in very sutric form, very wonderful way. And once you have dasha-mula, you understand the number 9 and number 10. Number 9 is how to perform bhajan, how to actually perform sadhana and bhava bhakti. And then number 10 is Prayojan Tattva. So they're all built on Sambandha Tattva, and that Sambandha Tattva brings us to the liberated platform of Madhyama Adhikari, where bhakti actually begins. So just like here, Transcendental Knowledge, fourth chapter, brings you to nice karmya action. You're performing things for Krishna rather than your own sense of gratification on the basis of illusion. So we should understand the Bhagavad Gita verse by verse, but we should see the perfection of it. And there's no summation. This is the Gita Upanishad, it's all the summation, it is the Vedanta Sutra, everything is perfectly ordered. And we're very, very fortunate. Sometimes I was discussing with one devotee, it's better to meet Srila Prabhupada's books and Bhakti Vinod and Bhakti Siddhanta, their books, than to meet Lord Chaitanya. Because if we meet Lord Chaitanya, we might think, well, he's just a sannyasi dancing in the street. Prakashananda Saraswati should talk to him. But if we actually study Prabhupada's book, Guru Krishna Prasadibai, then we'll qualify to understand Lord Chaitanya, you see. And if we stay faithful to this path, then one day we will. We'll enter the Rasleela. We'll enter the Kirtan party of Lord Chaitanya. So, we should have our mind fixed on the goal. And how do we develop realization of that goal? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Okay. Any questions? Yeah, it's all answered in the Gita, isn't it? We just chant Hare Krishna. I'll tell you a funny story, shall I? You know, Brahmananda, he's passed on now. So he was my old pal in Africa. We used to go preaching. He told me a funny story once. He said, in the beginning, he was in India. And one pandit said, he was, you know, going, doing programs, not with Prabhupada. And Indian pandit said, you know, you're a sannyasi, do you know Sanskrit? And Brahmananda said, yes. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Hare Hare. And then the pandit said, is that all you know? Then Brahmananda said, is there anything else? That's very brilliant, isn't it? Is there anything else than Krishna's name, understanding what Hare means, what Krishna means? Oh Krishna, please engage me in your service. Oh Radha, please engage me in your service. Is there anything else? Jai, Srila Prabhupada Bhagavad Gita Sadhu Sangha Ki Jai.